Hey, John, want to hear a joke?
Yeah.
So little Johnny had grown up and become a doctor and was sent down to the Amazon to check out this tribe for COVID-19. Well, when he gets there, he just notices that there's all men, and he says to him, "How do you guys relieve sexual tension?" Well, one of the guys in the tribe says, "Well, come down by the river tomorrow morning and we'll show you." So little Johnny gets up in the morning, goes down, and sees that there's a donkey there. Well, the guy says, "Well, since you're our guest, you can go first." So, not wanting to break custom, little Johnny starts kissing the donkey and proceeds to make love to it. Well, after about 10 minutes, one of the guys in the tribe says, "Hey, are you about done over there? We need that donkey to get across the river to go to the tribe of women."
It's crazy how we can look back to a year ago and realize how much everything has changed. The amount of people that left your life, entered, and stayed. The memories you wish you won't forget, and the moments you wish you did. Everything. It's crazy how all that happened in just 1 year.
Today is what the day is?
Prefatory.
Definition: serving as an introduction.
There is not a day that I wake up that I don't feel like going back to sleep, or that I don't have anxiety about what my day is going to bring. And you know what I do? I wake up and I go handle it.
And you have to understand, if you don't execute on the plan, if you don't get up in the morning when you're feeling tired, scared, if you don't execute, you're not just cheating yourself. You're cheating your family. You're cheating your employees. You're cheating your team, whatever you're a part of.
Your biggest enemy is you. It's you against you. The only person that gets in your way is you. Nobody else. It's you.
I need you to confront you because you're the one holding you up. I need you to look in the mirror and tell you, you are not going to do me like this no more. You're not going to continue to sabotage me. You're not going to keep procrastinating. You're not. You know you should be further in life, but you keep letting you slide. Hold you accountable and don't let you off the hook.
If for 10 years, if you didn't avoid doing what you knew you needed to do, what would you be like? What would happen if you just stopped wasting the opportunities that are in front of you? You'd be 10 times more efficient, 20 times more efficient. You have no idea how efficient people get.
I want you to challenge you the last quarter of this year to do something you've never done before, to have something you've never had before. They're not going to give it to you. But if you're willing to get up every day and go take it, if you're willing to get up every day and work for it, if you're willing to get up every day and grind from sunup to sundown, you can have the life that other people dream of.
And I can negotiate with myself. Most of us come out here, we explain away why we can't do shit, and we stick in this negotiation process in our mind. You can't negotiate these things. They're definites.
If you really want to change your life, do so by learning how to be gritty. Do so by learning how to be resilient. Do so by showing up time after time after time after time, long after everybody else has lost interest in showing up, and you will get where you want to go.
Just keep pushing forward. With enough action, any goal can be achieved.
Everything that is great comes from being in a position of uncomfortable. And if you can get used to being uncomfortable, your fucking limits are non-existent.
There are no shortcuts. There are no hacks. If you want to take the easy road, I promise you it's longer and more painful than the hard road. Choose the hard path. The path of responsibility, hard work, and sacrifice. The path of discipline, humility, and ownership that ultimately leads to freedom. It won't be easy. It will demand everything you've got to give, but you can do it. Discipline equals freedom. That's not a contradiction. It's an equation. Discipline is the path to freedom. Discipline is the driver of daily execution. Discipline defeats the infinite excuses that hold you back. Make discipline part of your daily life, and your daily life will get better.
From ABC News.
I'm Derek Dennis. A sweeping federal indictment just announced today against New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez, alleging he and his wife took bribes in the form of cash, a luxury car, and even gold bars to help local businessmen. And there's more.
Senator Menendez allegedly gave sensitive United States government information that secretly aided the government of Egypt. The indictment does not say what that information was.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, no comment yet from the senator. Also just announced the United Auto Workers expanding their week-old strike to 38 more Stellantis, GM, and Ford plants or distribution centers in 20 states. UAW Union President Sean Fain addressing the rank and file minutes ago.
Senator,
as we've said for weeks, we're not going to wait around forever for a fair contract at the Big Three. The companies know how to make this right. The public is on our side, and the members of the UAW are ready to stand up.
Workers want more pay, better benefits for new hires, and a four-day work week. The automakers say they're financially strapped, building more electric cars. President Biden with an embarrassing gaffe addressing the Congressional Hispanic Caucus last night. He praised another group, the Congressional Black Caucus. Still, Biden touted his accomplishments.
We have the lowest inflation and the fastest recovery and the strongest economy of any major economy in the world.
Republicans tweeting out a clip of Biden's gaffe on X. Brewing out in the Atlantic, what could become Tropical Storm Ophelia. Warnings are already up from North Carolina to Delaware, with heavy rain and winds expected to hit the Carolinas today. And tragedy north of New York City. Two adult women chaperones killed, five students in critical condition after a bus carrying high schoolers rolled over and down a highway ravine yesterday.
And it was like, this can't be real. And then, like, I just heard everyone screaming.
You're listening to ABC News. We're getting a chance to hear a 911 call after a Marine Corps pilot was forced to eject from a stealth fighter over South Carolina.
It was a remarkable exchange between a bewildered homeowner, the dazed fighter pilot who landed in the homeowner's backyard, and the dispatcher, apparently unaware she is talking to the actual pilot.
How far did he fall?
I was at 2,000 feet.
Okay, and what caused the fall?
An aircraft failure.
And the 47-year-old pilot, still unaware his aircraft was likely still airborne.
ABC's Martha Raddatz. The plane flew about 60 miles on its own before crashing. Some dramatic differences showing up in new numbers on unemployment when you look state by state.
Maryland last month recorded the lowest unemployment rate in the country at 1.7%. At the other end of the scale is California at 4.6%. But if you look at the year-over-year changes, you'll find neighboring states that appear to be competing for the same workers. New Jersey's jobless rate surged by more than 1% from August to August, while in Maryland, just two states away, the number fell by almost 2%. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
More talks set for today in the Hollywood writer strike. Four studio CEOs were on hand late into the night for negotiations. The writers have been out since May. Hollywood actors have also been on strike for months. This is ABC News.
The following program can be heard across platforms such as Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And with that being said, the Ace of Alone Show starts right now.
Step I've ever taken in the wrong direction helped me get to where I am today and led to monumental moments in my life that I would not have got.
We had scheduled a bout with Gino Hernandez. However, we've reached a milestone, a sad moment in World Class Championship Wrestling. Gino Hernandez is dead.
On February the 4th, 1986, the professional wrestling world was in shock. 28-year-old wrestler Gino Hernandez was dead.
Popular wrestling star's badly decomposed body was discovered late last night at his home in Highland Park. He had apparently been dead for several days.
So a lot of people, when Gino died, they know exactly what happened. Now I'm listening to the person telling the story, and it's not even close to true, because I live the story.
Dallas police say that Hernandez might have been murdered.
The rumor grows, the story grows, and it gets more grandiose as it grows.
At the time of Gino's death, Gino was already a major talent.
He was caught up in a very fast life. And as a result of that, he paid. And he paid with his life.
Well, in all respect to Gino Hernandez, I think the Gino Hernandez you saw in the ring was very much like the Gino Hernandez outside the ring. And he was one who typically did everything his way.
As a mother, I got a lot of questions that nobody has ever, ever answered me.
Many believe that Gino's death was a tragic accident. But for over 30 years, family members and wrestlers have believed it to be murder.
Well, I think there are a lot of rumors in wrestling, and it just comes from us being able to tell a story, man. We're trying to figure out the inside scoop on everything.
The only people that know what really happened to Gino was whoever was there.
A lot has been taken away from me, and God has blessed me to let me stay here this long and say this. Finally, I think my son was murdered. I don't think it. I almost know it.
In this episode, we put to rest decades of rumors and investigate one of wrestling's darkest mysteries.
Beautiful pictures, beautiful memories with our exactly. Beautiful family. He had a wonderful personality. He was a good son. He's a good father. And I want everybody to remember him as a good man.
I think the hardest thing for me was when he became a bad guy. And as a child at the wrestling matches, like people throwing pennies at us, all these girls coming up to the ring saying, sign it. And he'd like rip it and throw it. And I was like a little girl. I was like, oh, no, you know, he's such a bad guy.
As I say in the ring, Gino was evil.
Don't attempt to adjust your sensor. What you see is real. The most gorgeous human being on this earth.
He had it. He was special.
He was the type of guy that could have fit right in with a Randy Macho Man Savage or some of those guys. So who knows where Gino would have went.
You can't buy it. You can't steal it. You can't borrow it. You either got it or you don't. And that's called charisma. And he had charisma, man.
You guys worked some matches together?
Yeah, tag matches. Yeah.
Who's the wrestler if you hate the most?
Gino!
Cocky, arrogant, good-looking, talented.
If you were to see Gino, you would have thought he was connected or he was a celebrity of some type. He always just looked like money.
He was all about the finest suits, the finest custom-made shirts, the rings and the watches. You name it, that was Gino. And it wasn't a gimmick. That was him. If he wanted to, he could take that room and have everybody in that room hating his guts and wanting to kill him in real life.
I overcome any obstacle in my life, and especially some hormone-imbibed female that tries to stick her nose in a man's business.
And he could talk. And it's easy to hate somebody who's good-looking, got money or whatever, got the pretty girl on the side, and must be nice. Full head of hair, got all this shit, you know.
I'd like to show you and the people pictures, no other.
Farrah Fawcett, I think they had a few dates.
Who does she choose to be with?
My wife was on the front row, and he said some of the things he would say to him. I don't know that I wouldn't be waiting outside to knock him out. It almost came natural for him. One night, Gino had said something, and he insulted to the point this big cowboy guy was getting up. He was headed to the ring, and the police stopped him. Well, Gino starts saying, let him go, let him go, let him come in here, to the point he convinced the police, let him go. And then Gino's telling me, stop him, stop him. He's whispering in the back of my ear. But I told him in the dressing room, I said, you bit that off, you chew it. David Manning, I was the referee and promoter and booker for World Class Championship Wrestling from 77, 78 till around 89. Probably I'd been in the business for about 5 years when Gino started coming in. At that time, I was a referee and he was a wrestler. The greatest thing about Gino being a heel was, one, the microphone. Gino's one of the few pieces of talent. I'd actually put Gino in the category of a Ric Flair, a Jim Cornette, a Michael Hayes, the people that you just hand them a mic and they can do it.
Tonight's the night. I told you, I brought out the $60,000 limo tonight. The World Junior Heavyweight Champion. Not bad for a kid from Spring Branch High, huh?
You know, he was real close with the promoter Paul Bosch in Houston, where Gino got his big break was Houston.
Gorgeous Gino.
I remember meeting Gino when he had to be 17, 18 years old. Good looking guy, you know, good body and everything, and had chicks all over him. Full of himself, conceited. I was just a kid, so he treated me like a kid at the time.
I was a professional model at one time. Most of the time, I just took care of my daughter and my son, Gino. I was a single parent.
Do you prefer to call him Charles or Gino?
Gino.
Gino?
Well, if you were a wrestler, would you rather use the name Charles or Gino? Because Gino always referred to himself as Gorgeous Gino.
Gorgeous Gino Hernandez.
GG with two G's on the back of his jacket. He had Lewis's name. Gino sometimes would kind of prance around, brag that his dad was Lewis Hernandez, you know.
Did they play wrestle at all in the house and stuff?
Lord, yes. From morning to night.
Well, I've always been a fan of wrestling all my life, and my father was a wrestler, and he died when I was 12 years old, and I began to start training for wrestling from the time I was in high school, and I turned professional at the age of 17, right out of high school.
When he got into the ring, it was like he'd been wrestling for years. He was flying off the rope, and I'm going, where did he learn that from? He said, my dad did it for me. I was wearing his shoes. He said he did everything for me. And of course, I had to cry when he told me that.
We were married very young. We were both 18, and we had our first child. So that started our family. I'm Janice Gillespie, and I grew up in Houston, Texas. And that is where I met Charles Wolfe, who you might know as Gino Hernandez. And after we were married, he kept his life very separate. So he had his professional life, and he'd work out in the mornings, and then he'd have a workout in the afternoon. It really consumed most of his day. And then he had his family. There was really very little mixing outside of just family.
There was the soft side of him. It was really a pushover. He loved his children very, very much.
Everybody knows I'm the man of the hour, the man with the power, too sweet to be sour.
You know, going back and like watching the footage and hearing him talk.
227 pounds of twisted steel. And sex appeal.
It's like a voice I always knew.
Really, everywhere we went, people knew he was Gino. He would get into his persona, his character, especially when he became a heel. He would really be very, very intimidating. It made me very uncomfortable to be around him when you would see him like that.
Has there been times in your life where your wrestling persona has bled into your real life?
Jake Roberts never had a fucking problem in his life. He's a bad motherfucker that don't give a fuck about anybody, and he's going to do what he pleases, and he's going to go on with life. Don't fuck with him. He will fuck you up. Aurelian Smith, on the other hand, is a human being, man, that cares about other people. He's made some mistakes. He's a recovering alcoholic addict. So, yeah, that guy has problems. Jake the Snake doesn't.
For people to get mad at me for when I get on TV and say I'm the latest and I'm the greatest and I'm so fine that I'm divine. For people to say I'm conceited, I don't understand it.
He lived his gimmick in the ring and he lived it out of the ring.
We're into sports cars, we're into fast cars, faster women, and fast life.
He lived it, he ate it, and he slept it. He loved every minute, and he could bring that on just like that. And I used to tell him, you can drop that now, I know who you are.
I know that he and Chris had a very successful tag team, the dynamic duo.
Chris Adams was, he was a good guy. He could be a good friend as long as alcohol was involved. They were a great team.
We got the looks, we got the ability, we got the money, we got the women, we got the belt. And from now on, we are number one.
We're bad, we're real bad.
Yo, let's go.
We're bad to the bone.
All right. They're bad to the bone. Well, there they go. Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez. See you guys.
Gino's social life and his life outside of wrestling was just as flamboyant as inside the Coliseum when Gino came to perform.
As a matter of fact, one of the highlighted matches at one of the biggest draws we ever had was at the Cotton Bowl.
It's all come down to the Cotton Bowl tomorrow at 3 p.m.
And it was Gino and Chris Adams against Kevin and Kerry, a hair match. Chris and Gino both had just gorgeous hair down, you know, the whole thing, the sculpture look. And the Von Erichs both had long hair, so People weren't sure what was going to happen here.
And he would get in that ring and he just owned the crowd. He knew exactly what he was doing. I've seen a lot of wrestlers in my life, and I've seen a lot of guys try to do what Gino did, and he was such an artist.
And sure enough, Gino and Chris lost, and I remember they were holding them in those seats, and they brought the razors out. The crowd was going crazy. They were cheering. They were so happy these guys were fixing to lose their hair. And they had the perfect reaction, you know, and it just elevated the feud.
There was a nightclub in Houston called Judges that Gino frequented quite a bit. That was the place to go on Friday night after the matches and party all night long.
My name is Jeannie Williams. In 1985, Chris asked me to move to Dallas, and he said, you live next door to my friend Gino Hernandez. So Gino and I were neighbors.
Gino was front and center, man. It wasn't like it was a secret that Gino did drugs, from smoking dope to cocaine and uppers and downers. It was the 70s and 80s, and we all did. I never saw Gino out of control on drugs. But Gino liked to party and have a good time.
Gino comes knocking on the door. His eyes are huge, and he's like, touch my head, oh my God, my hair, because I just had the hair shaved. And so we all decided we'd go to a nightclub. We get in the car, and he's going about 100 miles an hour, and he has this tiny piece of paper, and he says, just take this. We get to the club, and then everybody's just, everything's going all strange, and Gino is laughing. I want to go to the bathroom, and as I was walking, it was like my feet were going in clouds, and I come to find out afterwards that Gino had given me some acid.
I was in Las Vegas one time, and Gino had a friend with him. This particular gentleman was he had a plane. They had rented the whole top suite floor of the hotel there, just partying for like 3 days. But I knew a lot of those guys were, I don't know if they were furnishing it all to him, but from that time on after Las Vegas, it was just a slowly progression. Gino just, he ran with a pretty tough crowd in Houston. You know, if you hang around trouble, you're gonna get trouble. It's like I always say, getting into the wrestling's like getting into the mob. Once you're in, you're in. It can go the other way too. So you gotta watch who you hang out with.
Unknown to his family, Gino had been running with a fast and dangerous crowd, but the party wouldn't last much longer.
Do you know or have you heard about some of those people that he was hanging around, those heavier folks?
I just heard he was like, no, I don't know. I'm going to say, I don't know. That's what I said is what it was. I heard that it was people that you didn't mess with that had power in the city of Houston and Dallas, and there's certainly those kind of people out there.
Well, when our children were young, we divorced. I just didn't feel so safe about some of the people he might be hanging out with, things I was hearing.
These were strong, powerful people within the city that might not have liked certain things getting out.
There was just a side of him and people he ran with that I felt dangerous.
By 1986, there was a shift in the dynamic duo's storyline, which saw Chris and Gino turn against each other, igniting a vicious rivalry.
Yeah, one of Gino's last matches was he and Chris. We did a gimmick where, I think it's Nair, it was like, you know, girls get it to get rid of hair. Gino sprayed it in Chris's eyes, and for weeks Chris wore this thing he couldn't see and stuff like this. And whatever the gimmick was in the ring, that was the gimmick out of the ring. And so even around in the public, Chris would, you know, like he couldn't hardly see, and his wife Tony would lead him around and bumping into chairs, and that's what I really liked about the end. Whatever happened, you took it with you.
Do you remember the last time you saw him? Can you tell me about that?
Super Bowl Sunday, 1986. He was in a hurry, always in a hurry.
Did he seem like he was worried about anything to you at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. He was very fidgety and nervous when he came in. Say what you gotta say and leave.
She knew something was going on because he had come
home, to her home. And he had something, and he put it somewhere in her home, and he was acting nervous and antsy and felt like something might happen to him. And who it was, I don't think she knew who he was afraid of or who he was worried about.
Do you know what he hid in her house you're referring to?
No.
Was he nervous? Yeah, real nervous. And Gino wasn't afraid of anything, but there's certain things you can't dodge. If somebody wants to get you, they'll get you.
He came to the matches one night, and he came running in my office, and he was telling me this story, and he said, "You wouldn't believe it, Dave, you wouldn't believe it." And he said, "I'm driving, and I look in the back, and I can see someone sitting in the back." And he said, "I didn't know what to do." And he said, "So I'm watching to see if they're going to try to stab me or whatever." And he says, "So all of a sudden I just slammed on the brakes, and then they jumped out the back and they ran off." And he said, "I think they were going to kill me." He's like, I need a gun." I could just tell he was scared to death. And so I said, "No, I don't have a gun with me, Gino." I said, "But I think you're okay. I think, you know, maybe you just saw something." And he was like, no, they're following me. I'm afraid something's going to happen to me. You know, I got to get a gun. He was adamant someone was sitting in the back seat of his car, and he got a glimpse of him through his rearview mirror. Maybe Gino was telling me the truth all these times, that someone was either stalking him or someone was after him or someone was going to kill him. That night was the last night I saw Gino.
The last time I saw Gino alive, he said, "Hey, kiddo, look what I got here." And he had a white box, and he said it was a peach pie. And he said he was going out, but if I wanted to stop by the next day, come and have a slice. It's delicious.
On my birthday, February the 5th, 1986, Walter called me. He was Gino's manager. He did a lot of Gino's bookings. And he said, "Patrice, have you heard from Gino?" I said, "No, but why?" He said, "Well, I need to talk to him. I haven't heard from him, but today's my birthday, and I know he'll be calling me. I'll tell him to give you a call."
The next day, I saw Gino's car parked. I noticed the car was sort of out of alignment. The wheels were strange, like he parked it really quick.
He missed a show up in Oklahoma, and it wasn't like him, but I didn't think anything about it. And then we couldn't reach him. We tried to get a hold of Gino. We couldn't reach him.
The next day, the car was still the same position. I'm going to go and check on him and knocking on his door. And I can't really get a good vision, but I did see a pie, the pie.
And then I heard that, he didn't show up in Houston, which was definitely unusual. When I went to the office on Monday and I hadn't heard from Gino, I said, "We got a problem." One of the guys that refereed for us was named Rick Hazard. And I said, "Rick, why don't you go over to Gino's apartment and see if his car's there?" And so he called me and he said, "Well, the car's here, but no one's answering the door." And I said, "Why don't you see if you can get over the wall and just peek in?" And sure enough, Rick got over the wall. The way the bed was laying, at first he couldn't see anything. He just happened to glance down. And where the bed ended, he could see part of the body hanging out. At that point, they called the police. The cop said he had been laying there. They estimated about 4 to 5 days.
Walter took some wrestler and went to the condo. They got in because Walter was the only one they had the key.
There was a gun on the scene. So I don't know where Gino got the gun, but there was a gun on the scene when they found him.
Standing outside Chris's apartment, actually, and they're bringing out his body in a body bag. It was just like something you're in denial.
Probably about, I'd say, a very short span of time, Walter calls me again. And he said, "Patrice, it's Walter." And I said, "Did Gino get in touch with you?" I said, "He hadn't called me, but have you found him?" He said, "Yeah. I'm standing here in his condo." I said, "Well, is he okay?" He said, "He's dead." And he hung up. And I just started screaming.
Came to Gino Hernandez.
Wrestling fans were shocked at the sudden end to one of the brightest careers in the game. His friends were saddened by an irreplaceable loss of a vibrant young spirit. To his mother and sister, it was a tragedy of indescribable magnitude.
Police arrived at the home of wrestler Gino Hernandez in February of 1986 and discovered his dead body. It was so decomposed that the exact cause of death could not be determined. A loaded pistol was found next to his right hand, and police found no sign of drugs or paraphernalia in the condo.
Could you walk us through? You were just home and you heard a knock on the door?
Yeah, I was grieving. Meek and I was grieving. And he just knocked on the door and he said, I would like to come in and discuss the funeral with you. Of course I let him in. Gino knew him. Gino went places with him. But I really didn't know him. We're both sitting facing each other, sitting on the floor. And if I can recollect, he says to me, Gino owed me a lot of money. But just don't you worry about it. Because I'm going to pay for his funeral. And I was sitting there and I know how I felt looking at him. I was scared to death.
Did what he said at the time feel like it was the threat?
Yeah. Well, it's just the tone of voice and the way somebody looks at you when they stick their finger in you and they lean into you like, do you hear me? No remorse, no empathy, nothing. Nothing. I'm an intelligent woman. And I can read a person pretty doggone well, eye-to-eye contact. That tells you a lot.
You know, I remember walking into the funeral. Went up, paid our respects. There was a platinum casket. And it was closed casket.
So many people. I dressed the finest I could dress, like a movie star, because I knew Gino wanted me to look that way.
There were a lot of people that were hurting, his mom and his sister, oh my gosh, and that was just painful to know they were hurting. There was a group of men, and Patrice would probably know who they were more than I would, that took care of all the finances of that funeral, and it was a very expensive funeral.
They do the service at the gravesite, and then they had a bottle of champagne, they had glasses, and people were pouring champagnes, and to you, Gino, drinking the champagne and breaking champagne glasses, you know, into the casket, toasting Gino. At all of this, it just was surreal to a point. Almost like an out-of-body experience. There was a gentleman there that did a eulogy that talked about Gino getting on planes and going to Vegas and beating up a guy and putting him in a headlock, and it was just weird. It was totally off. And it was almost like people going, who the fuck is this guy? And to some of us that hadn't been around for a while, we just thought it was, you know, a new friend or whatever. We had no clue.
His funeral, there was a lot of rich people. You might assume drug dealing is going on.
And people made comments like, do you know who that is? And I had no clue who it is. And if you were putting me in a lineup today, I wouldn't know who it is. But people talking about, oh, well, he's wanted by the authority show. I don't know who the hell he is.
Who was the guy that gave the eulogy? It was John Royal.
So did you know any of the activities that John Royal was involved in at all?
I just heard that he was a drug dealer. I mean, I didn't know anything about the man, period. As far as I know right now, he's in prison. I would have done just pretty much anything then, just to make sure my daughter was safe, and I was too. And that's the way it's been all these years. I hadn't talked to anybody until I talked to you guys.
As the Hernandez family mourned Gino's mysterious death, many questions remained unanswered. Rumors began to fly throughout the wrestling community and beyond.
So a lot of people, when Gino died, were immediately telling the story. Here's what happened.
Andre the Giant told us that he knew for a fact that Gino had been shot in the head. And that was not the case.
I heard from somebody that he was close with that he used to take trips down to Houston, Southwest Airlines, several times a week to go down to Houston for what I don't know.
The rumor mill was that he had gambled and that he owed some money on a football game.
And so you got all these different rumors, and with Chris and with Gino, you had the conflict going on.
Police have received several telephone calls from concerned fans who say Hernandez might have been murdered.
And immediately it's like, well, Chris did it. Why? The guy blinded him.
Had you ever heard that all the world-class fans called the police saying it must have been Chris?
I did hear that. And I think the police actually did contact Chris about the murder of Gino.
That goes to show just how believable world-class championship wrestling was. That somebody would go to the depth to think, Jesus, he killed that guy because that guy took his eyesight. This is a case that we're talking 30 years ago. And there's been a lot of rumors like this.
None of the family members were ever allowed to see him. His corpse, his body was just so guarded.
Who was telling you guys no?
I think Walter. It would just be too shocking because he had been dead for so long that they didn't want anybody to see him.
No, I'm pretty meticulous about saving everything. This is the suitcase that I put everything in after I had collected stuff, after he had passed away, anything that I could get my hands on, because I never got to go in his apartment. As a mother, I got a lot of questions that nobody has ever, ever answered me. Then I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll just do my own investigate. And if I can find out the right person to contact, I'll contact that person and take care of it myself. Worry about the consequences later. And that's exactly what I did.
I think there was foul play in Gino's death only because, one, he was super paranoid. When he walked into his apartment, he locked the doors. And he had a deadbolt on the inside. So the deadbolt was not locked from the inside of the apartment. It never made any sense to me.
The deadbolt wasn't on, and he always locked up. So somebody was there with him. Well, who was there with him and left him alone?
If it would have been me, and I would have said, you need to do an autopsy because someone murdered him.
The autopsy report, when they found him, and he had been dead for a while, I asked what happened. I believe they said that it might be a drug overdose.
I remember talking to the coroner, and he said that Gino had cocaine in his system, but he had 5 times the amount.
I believe I was told he had enough that could have killed an elephant.
He had more than just enough to overdose. He had 3 or 4 or 5 times in his body that it would take to overdose.
The medical examiner had said that he didn't understand how that much cocaine could get in someone, be ingested. It makes you question, what the hell happened?
Autopsy report said he was morbidly obese. It said that he was Hispanic. She asked me, she said, now, I'm pretty sure about this because, I did give birth to him. Was Gino circumcised? I said, well, he was. Well, the autopsy report said it was an uncircumcised male.
How did that make you feel?
Well, first of all, is that even really him? If it's not him, I wondered sometimes, would he have faked his own death? When we were married, there was a comedy sitcom, I don't remember the name of it. The main character had faked his own death. He was in some sort of trouble, whether it was tax evasion or he was trying to hide from somebody after him. He had left a wife and a child and came back like 7 years later. Gino had said, I'm going to do that someday. That's what I would do.
Well, I wished that it wasn't him in there. But I know in my heart that if he was alive, I'd have heard from him by now.
She was wanting to push for answers and really push for answers. And as a mother, I felt for her. And we had the discussion that, well, if we start stirring the pot, what's going to keep them from doing something to, our children?
At this point, is sort of your working theory of what happened?
It feels like he was probably killed, that somebody murdered him. It feels that way to me.
That's what the rumblings were at the time, that he had been murdered. And I could certainly see that happening with Gino, you know. Some of the people he hung with were powerful people. He may have pissed somebody off.
If he were in some way involved with a drug ring, maybe he knew something. And maybe they were worried he would talk.
Conspiracy theories about Gino's death lingered on, but it would take over 30 years before answers began to surface. In the days leading up to Gino's mysterious death, those closest to him noticed that he seemed fearful of something or someone.
Of course, you know, this is hearsay, you know, but it seems to be that general consensus that he, weeks leading up or prior to his death, he felt like somebody was going to kill him. To hear multiple people saying that they got that from him as well, maybe this was a very real possibility. You know, maybe this is what happened.
I was going to my car and he was coming in and he says, "Hey, I want you to come along, have a couple of drinks." So I said, "Okay." We actually walked to his apartment. He walked into the kitchen and he had a cabinet above his sink. He took out a cereal bowl and the bowl was full of cocaine. There's a lot of cocaine in there. And he put that on the counter and he started using the cocaine. It wasn't very long, maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes later, he stopped speaking. And when I talked, he said, "Shh." He wasn't being angry to me, but he was, "Shh, don't speak." He kept going into the back and looking out the window. He had a quite intense paranoia. He puts a plug in the sink and turns on the water. The water started coming over the top, dripping onto the floor. I go to pull the plug out of the sink and he stops me, pulls me back. He was like, "Shh." The water was still falling on the floor. I turned just around a little bit. He had a gun in his hand. My heart stopped to beat quite fast. And he was holding me, telling me to be really quiet, and could hear nothing but the water. And he seemed to be comforted that it was covering up sound of some kind. Just the sound of the water seemed, for whatever reason, he found that comforting. He would go to the windows and he would just stare outside into the darkness. Over and over again, just looking outside into the darkness. Because he was afraid, it seemed, of the dark in his mind.
Did you know or come to know at any point that Gino had sort of issues with drugs?
Yeah, because I was doing them with him. Duh. I mean, I was no saint, man. I know that Gino was doing coke, and I don't know how much he was doing. But the night I was there, he damn sure had some quite a bit there. You know, wasn't no eight ball, that's for damn sure.
I was surprised that there was not any cocaine found by the police, but I did hear rumors that it was cleaned up.
I would just say a good source told me that Rick was kind enough to immediately, there was a bowl. He said it was crazy. It was almost like a sugar bowl. And he said, "I've never seen that much blow in my life. It was full of coke." Just out of reaction, he just took it and dumped it. I don't think anyone else that was even there knew that. I don't know who he thought maybe he was protecting, but, you know, I think he just did it out of instinct.
Some of the wrestlers, including Chris, said there might be more to it. Where was he getting so much cocaine from?
I was afraid then. Very afraid, because I haven't talked about it all these years, because I got tired of looking over my shoulder every time I walked out the apartment, and I've been living like that ever since. Nobody should have to live like that. It took a lot of my life away from me, and now, you know, 77, where do I go from here? It's too much secrecy, too much lying, too much too much deceit. I truly believe he's not here today because of the people he chose to be around. I have nothing to lose because I've already lost part of it. You know, you can't take any more away from me than you already have. All we really want is just an answer.
Shortly after Gino's family told their story, producers contacted John Royal by phone. He had recently served a 30-year prison term for trafficking cocaine. What follows is their recorded conversation.
We're doing a documentary about Gino, and we've been talking a lot with his family, and your name has come up a couple of times because you were close friends with Gino. Gino's mother had told us a story, is a time when you approached her and had told her that you were going to pay for the funeral. Is that true?
Yeah.
I think you had also said that Gino had owed you a lot of money. Is that something that you had said to her as well?
No, Gino didn't owe me any money. I mean, I paid for the funeral.
Right.
But Gino didn't owe me any money.
Well, that's really good to know.
What, does she think that he owes me some money, that I did something to him?
Had you ever heard any rumors about, you know, Gino's death not being something that was accidental? Like,
no. I was with him till like 1 o'clock in the morning the night he died.
Right.
We were at a club and he was in a good mood and he was buying drinks and he was drinking a lot. I assumed that he was doing some drugs. Then Gino left with these airline stewardesses. And that's the last time I saw him alive, and then, so it presumably that was the night that he died.
In addition to John Royal's story, a former drug trafficker who asked to remain anonymous has come forward with his version of events.
Yeah, I really want to remain anonymous. This was 30 years ago, and I'm not really here to sugarcoat anything. I wanted to tell the truth. You know, I'd like to set the record straight for the people who are concerned about Gino's demise.
I wanted you to hear first what he had to say about him and about everything.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know this.
Would you wait this long? 32 years. And yes, I miss him. I pray for him every day. I talk to him. She knows that. I get up at 4 o'clock every morning.
She was up this morning.
Yeah, never miss.
Prayed for 2 hours.
Yeah, I do that.
Okay, let me know when you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
There's nothing I can gain from this. I'm only doing this because I don't want Gino's family to worry one more minute. If they've been worried for 30 years, they worried, you know, 29 years and 364 days too long. I met Gino through some of the other people in the group, and we got to be good friends. This was the 80s, and disco was popular, and the cocaine and drugs were all just a part of that culture. And we kind of saw the opportunity to get involved in selling drugs. And one of the guys in the group had cultivated a connection. He would bring it in, and he would give us each a certain amount of it. And not many people know that Gino was involved in this. He was a professional wrestler, and he saw us starting to make some money, and he thought it'd be a good opportunity for him. He didn't make a lot of money as a wrestler, and it was basically just a way for some young guys to make some money, and it was just something that everybody was kind of doing in that period of time.
Do you remember giving a eulogy at Gino's funeral?
Absolutely.
Did you remember what you said? I know it was a long time
ago. Well, I mean, I said something like, you know, in wrestling there's good guys and bad guys, and Gino was a bad guy, but in life Gino was a good guy. You know, that's kind of what I opened up with. I remember there was no foul play. It was with me. And this is something you don't know either. I had a trial. See, I was selling drugs at the time. They basically said that I gave Gino the drugs that he died on. You know, basically, you know, right. They were talking bad, dope, bad. You know, it was just fabricated.
And what do you think the circumstances were of his death?
Unfortunately, I felt like Gino started off recreationally using the drugs, and I think the drugs got hold of him. And of course, we were all, you know, super concerned because we were in a business that we knew could get us in a lot of trouble, even though we weren't gangsters. And at the same time, I don't think we saw a cop behind every bush like Gino seemed to do in the last part of his life. Just knowing Gino, I would imagine that he probably went to a club and probably drank a lot of alcohol, and he probably came back to his apartment, overdosed on drugs, and died of a combination of drugs and alcohol.
I have misgivings because Gino had this problem with the drugs, and that I should have recognized it and did an intervention with him and saved him.
I don't know Gino's family, but I would speak to them directly and say, do not be concerned about anything that happened to Gino. It was basically just a situation of his own doing, unfortunately. I know that's hard to hear because I know you loved him and I loved him too, but if you're concerned about anything, you should put that at rest because you've worried for 30 years and I can absolutely tell you there's nothing to worry about.
Can't take those years back. But I still have my daughter. And it's just nice to know that we don't have anything to worry about. Not anymore. And I thank you very much for this.
I want to believe that it was a tragic accident. I want to believe that somehow, some way, he made a mistake. That's what I want to believe.
I'm the type of person I can forgive anybody. You know? Yes, I forgive John Royal. I forgive anybody that I thought the wrong way, but I didn't know any different. Had nobody tell me outright.
Watching my grandma, she's lived a sad life. I mean, she's gone through things and lived through things that no mother should ever have to. And sometimes you look at her and you think, wow, you know, you can't believe that she walked that walk and that she's still smiling today. But she is, you know, and that's, I think, the piece of life that goes on.
But now I know there's nothing to be afraid of. Nothing. I feel so good. I could even have a margarita.
All right.
The legacy of Gino Hernandez, unfortunately, he wasn't around long enough to create one of those. I would like to see him put Gino into the Hall of Fame. I think Gino was that good.
I want him to be remembered for the person that he was. And he made me, as his mother, very, very proud.
I hear a lot that I look like my dad. I mean, my mom used to say, you look like your dad, you talk like your dad.
It's smooth sailing from here on out.
I have 5 children. I have 2 girls and 3 boys. And you see little pieces of each of them in him through those videos. That's what's cool to watch.
With you guys here and doing this, it's kind of like I finally get my peace at heart. And I thank you for that.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. The auto workers' strike has just been expanded. UAW President Sean Fain.
At noon Eastern time, all of the parts distribution facilities at General Motors and Stellantis are being called to stand up and strike. We will be striking 38 locations across 20 states.
Reporter Nora Naughton, who covers the industry for the business site Insider, says it's a major move.
Those are the plants that feed into the entire system. And when you lose production at those plants, that's when things at General Assemblies go down. That's when the whole system falls apart.
The initial walkout hit 3 plants in 3 states late last week. Ford was spared any new action because it has agreed to some union demands. Federal prosecutors say they found gold bars and $480,000 in stashed cash at the home of New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez. He and his wife have been indicted on bribery charges. It's all unrelated to the corruption case 6 years ago against the Democrat that ended in a hung jury. correspondent Nicole Killian is on Capitol Hill, where it's quiet after a week of failure to try to get a spending measure passed.
Yes, we know time is running out, but I can also say that, you know, lawmakers in both chambers are working to try to avert a shutdown. All hope is not lost. Obviously, lawmakers are out for the weekend. Probably the earliest would be next Tuesday, which doesn't leave too much more time to spare.
It'll be a weekend washout along much of the East Coast. A storm system's expected to become Tropical Storm Ophelia. Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen.
The projected track goes from north of the Bahamas on up towards the outer banks of North Carolina out towards the Cape Hatteras area, continues on up through the Virginia Capes and then towards the Chesapeake, and will slow down as it gets towards Delaware and the southern portions of New Jersey.
A 911 recording has just been released from last Sunday when a military fighter jet went missing in South Carolina. The pilot ejected safely and made it to a home to call for help.
I'm the pilot. We need to get rescue rolling. I'm not sure where the airplane is. It would have crash landed somewhere. I ejected.
How far did he fall?
I was at 2,000 feet.
Okay, and what caused the fall?
An aircraft failure.
The wreckage of the jet was eventually found. It kept flying for 60 miles. There's an investigation into what happened. Amazon's Prime Video says it'll begin showing ads during shows and movies early next year. The company says Amazon Prime members can pay $2.99 a month to stay ad-free. Wall Street, Dow up 36. This is CBS News.
If you guys enjoyed that episode, do me a favor. Leave me a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible. Or however many stars you think I deserve. And until next time, I'll catch your asses down the road.
Grab a clue, what could that be? They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous. But I don't give a fuck, I keep chasing. They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous. But I don't give a fuck, I keep chasing. I think this life could be special if I get rid of the devils. They think that I am a rebel. I think they want me to settle. There's nobody on my left.